Hello and welcome to the Food Connections podcast, the podcast that connects you with the food you eat. I'm Dr. Laura Wyness, a registered nutritionist, and I love learning more about the food we eat, how it's made, and getting to know the people involved in making our food. This episode shares the Scottish tea story, and I'm joined by two great guests, Sandra Benn and Susie Walker-Munro. I'll introduce Susie a bit later on, as I first had a chat with Sandra to find out more about Scotland's link with tea. Sandra Benn is the founder of Chia and Chai, a loose-leaf tea business based in Musselburgh, East Lothian, Scotland. After a long career in banking, Sandra decided to pivot towards her passion for tea, which had developed through her global travels and personal experiences. Her brand, which launched in 2020, offers a curated selection of high-quality teas along with tea accessories and personalised gifts. Sandra is qualified with the UK Tea Academy and hosts tea tasting experiences, both online and in person, focusing on the rich history and varied flavours of teas from different cultures and sharing her belief in tea as a medium for health, relaxation and connection. I hope you enjoy listening. So welcome to this episode of Food Connections podcast. Welcome to Sandra Benn, who I'm joined with tonight. How are you?
Hello. Hi, I'm great, thanks. And thanks for having me, Laura.
Really interested to chat to you tonight all about tea. I have my cup of tea actually by my side.
Excellent, me too.
So we kind of met through, I think it was business networking in Edinburgh a while ago, and we met up for a cup of tea shortly after in a chat, which is when I found out more about your story and Scotland's link to tea, which I didn't realise before. So I'm excited to hear more about that tonight.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and I'm always happy to share it with everybody because it's not actually that well known.
Can we start with your story and maybe your background? Because you came from a kind of banking background initially, and now there's tea. So how did that happen?
I joined the bank straight from school. So I did 34 years in retail banking in Edinburgh and had a wonderful time there, met loads of people, many of who are still good friends and mentors today. But after 34 years, I'd kind of had enough. I was ready to do something else. So I left in 2018 and the plan was to go and travel. My partner and I, we don't have kids. We've got a bit of freedom. We always hated the fact that we only got 28 days holiday and we had to get back to the office. So our plan was to travel. Sadly, his dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer. It wasn't given very long. So we didn't travel initially. Then the pandemic came and nobody was traveling anywhere anyway. And by that point, I was getting a little bit bored because I'd always networked with small businesses when I was in the bank and worked with them a lot. I'd always wondered, could I set up a business? And I just saw an opportunity, a little window to be able to do that. And when I thought about what I would want to do, it became really clear that my love of travel was going to have to feature in there somewhere. And I enjoy getting people together. And tea is the way that I enjoy sitting down with people and conversing with them and finding out what's going on. It's a real gossip opportunity. So that's what got me into tea, really. I love meeting with people and travel.
Yeah, and tea brings everyone together. It's such a useful tool for that.
Yeah, yeah.
In your business now, you can focus a lot on tea tasting events. How did that come about?
So initially, I was doing e-com and selling, retailing tea to people, and that's been really good. But at the heart of it, what I really enjoy is sitting down with people and talking to them about tea, explaining about where it comes from. You know, we are a nation of tea drinkers, but we don't really know a lot about it. So I love sharing how tea's made, where it's grown, introducing people to different flavours of tea, often things that they've never even heard of, which can be really interesting. And it's a really great social opportunity to get a group of friends together and do that. So yeah, I do private tea tastings in people's homes. I do quite a bit with the third sector. So there's a group in particular, Veterans Tribe Scotland. That's all former armed forces veterans. There's, you know, a bit of anxiety, a bit of loneliness, maybe a bit of PTSD, and we come together and do tea tastings as part of their wellbeing events. And I like to get into collaborations. So, for example, I've done I think you came along to this actually. I did a Qigong and tea tasting event, which was really interesting. So, you know, health and wellness and sort of retreat type activities and tea sit very well together. So I do those types of things. And I'm just about to launch my Christmas packages, which will be tea tastings, tea and chocolate tastings, and even a tea and scone baking class. So
nice.
So lots of different ways to introduce tea to people.
Gosh, it sounds like you're very busy. Tea is something that is so common and we drink a lot of it. It's something that I thought I knew a lot about tea, but obviously not when I went to your tea station events and found there's actually a Scottish connection to tea. So can you tell us a little bit more about the Scottish individuals who play an important part in the tea we drink today?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, when we were first drinking tea in Britain, that was in the sort of mid-1600s, and all of the tea that we drank then came from China. They had the monopoly on tea production. You know, over the next sort of 150 years, we were drinking more and more and more of it, and therefore we had an increase in reliance on China, and the relationship wasn't going particularly well. If you know anything about your colonial history, you'll understand that. So we had to look for a different place to grow tea. And that's when people like Robert Fortune came in. He was from the Scottish Borders. He worked for the Royal Horticultural Society. He was sent off to China to essentially steal tea seeds and tea plants and tea expertise, tea growing expertise. And he brought that back to India so that they could actually grow tea in India. There are two brothers from Edinburgh, Charles and Robert Bruce. They are credited with discovering the Assam variety of the tea plant. And also Archibald Campbell, who's from Islay, he's credited with planting the first tea gardens in Darjeeling. James Taylor, who's from Auchinblay up near Aberdeen, he is the father of Ceylon tea. He's the man that turned Ceylon from a coffee-growing nation to a tea-growing nation, again, from Scotland. And then there's the man who, you know, trumps them all, really, is Sir Thomas Lipton, who most people don't realise is actually from Glasgow. And he's the man who made tea available and affordable to the masses. So, yeah, really strong connection to tea. The most fascinating bit for me, though, is that there's a lady in Perthshire, Susie Walker Munro. She is the three times great-granddaughter of Charles Bruce, who discovered the Assam tea plant, and she grows tea in Perthshire, Kinnettles Gold, beautiful tea. So, and that's just like an amazing coincidence that keeps us connected, even in the modern day, to the world of tea.
Yeah, I will be speaking to Susie a bit later on, so that sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't realise that the strong connections of all these Scottish people with the tea we drink today. So thanks for that. I mean, your events are amazing. I was just blown away with all the knowledge that you have on Scotland and tea in general. So I highly recommend them. You talk about tea as being a medium for health and relaxation and connection. So we're all about food connections here. What would you say are the kind of nutrition health benefits of tea?
So the main benefit of drinking tea is because it's full of polyphenols. It's one of the best plants containing polyphenols that you can get. It's got the highest sort of proportion. And those polyphenols are what is super good for us. So they have antioxidant properties, which is really good for helping to reduce inflammation in our body. They have anti-inflammatory properties as well. So again, really good for helping us stay healthy. Tea is really good for hydration. And then the best part of all is that it's zero calorie. If you don't add milk, you don't add sugar, and you don't add cake, then tea is zero calories. So what's not to love about that?
Exactly. And it tastes so good as well. And is there a difference between black tea and green tea? Is one higher in antioxidants?
So I get asked that question a lot because there's a lot of information out there, especially on green tea, and saying it like it's super healthy and it's the best tea for you. The reality is that all tea is good for you. But what happens is the green tea leaf that we pluck off the bush and turning that into green tea or into black tea, it goes through an element of processing and the chemical makeup within the tea leaf changes. So the health benefits are the same, but where they come from is different within if you drink green tea versus black tea. The other thing is that in this country, we drink predominantly black tea. It's a great marketing tool if you say green tea is healthier for you, because you get people to drink green tea and you get them to drink more tea. So it does have a compound in it called AGCG. I'm not actually sure what that stands for. That's the thing that they promote regularly. But the reality is that all tea is good for you.
Yeah, I mean, it is so good at hydrating and all the antioxidants, as you say, really healthy. There's one thing I do often with my clients say, obviously everything in moderation, but up to 3-4 cups a day of tea is absolutely fine. More than that, I think for some people can lead to some bladder issues. It's a bladder stimulant if you have too much. I think it's the caffeine in tea.
Yeah, and caffeine, obviously, that is an important thing to talk about, actually, because obviously tea contains caffeine. True tea contains caffeine. If it's a herbal without any caffeine, then strictly speaking, that's a tisane or an infusion. To be true tea, it should come from the Camellia sinensis plant. That's just a bit of a nerdy fact. Yeah, so peppermint tea isn't really tea. It's an infusion or a tisane.
Ah.
But so true tea from Camellia sinensis has caffeine in it. It's got about half the caffeine that you would have in coffee. And roughly speaking, black tea will have a bit more caffeine in it than green tea, because the caffeine in your cup is influenced by the temperature of the water and how long you brew. And we brew black tea at a higher temperature and for longer than we would brew green tea. So black tea has more caffeine in than green tea. But tea generally has about half the caffeine in coffee.
And the only other thing I always say to people as well is if you're watching your iron levels, not to drink tea along with a meal, because of the tannins can bind to the iron and stop you absorbing iron from plant foods.
Right,
but as long as you leave a little bit of gap between having a meal and a drink of tea, then it's absolutely fine. But yeah, fascinating. Okay, so the other aspect that you've mentioned is the relaxation and kind of connection part of tea. So,
yeah.
I mean, as you say, tea brings everyone together for a little blether. What would you say about that?
When it comes to that, it's less about the scientific side of things and more about how it makes you feel. And I always say, when there's a crisis, nobody says, let's get a coffee and sort this out. They always say, I'm just going to put the kettle on, we'll have a cup of tea and we'll figure out what we're going to do here. And that's the beauty of a cup of tea. It's something that coffee is great for getting you started, getting you moving, getting you revved up. A cup of tea helps you to slow down and just pause, reflect, unwind, connect with people. I always recommend brewing in glass. I love to use loose leaf tea, and I always recommend brewing in glass because you can watch the tea leaves. If you see anything on my socials, you'll often see a teapot, a glass teapot, and the leaves just unfurling and moving about in the teapot. And it's just a 2 or 3 minutes of meditation, really. And, you know, I felt it was really important because when I started the business in 2020 in the pandemic, I saw people that I had worked with in the bank and they gave up their commute because they were working at home and they gave up to the laptop. They were completely stressed. And I knew, you know, when I had been in the office with them and something bad happened, an email came in or somebody's, you know, your work wasn't getting taken forward or whatever it was, you went off to the kitchen, you made a cup of tea, somebody came after you, made sure you were all right. And that was not going to happen when they were sitting at home. And I just wanted them to leave the laptop, go downstairs, put the kettle on, make a cup of tea, disconnect just for a couple of minutes, clear their head, and then when they go back to the desk, they're just in a much better frame of mind. And that's, I love that about tea when you're solo. And I love the fact that when you get together with friends, you know, conversations happen. I see it all the time in my tea tastings where memories emerge. People will talk about, you know, their parents or their grandparents. I love getting the china tea sets out because somebody always talks about their wedding china or something they were gifted from a relative who's no longer here now.
So, I saw one of your posts recently on social media of the china teacups, and I recognise the pattern of one of them, and I thought, exactly, my gran had that one.
Exactly. It's such a conversation starter, and it's a lovely way to connect with people right here, right now, but connect back to the stories that they have of their past. And I have, you know, I know a lot about tea, but I know a lot about people because of bringing them together over a pot of tea. It's a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, it kind of adds that mindfulness or just a pause, especially if you make it in a glass teapot. I'm going to have to buy one of those now, because normally when I make tea, I dunk a tea bag in and stir it for like 5 seconds. And
That's it. We're very dunk and go, but every now and again, just pause and get the loose leaf out and just watch those beautiful leaves unravel. It's amazing.
And it does taste so much better in a china teacup as well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So have you any kind of tea stories of your own, or any kind of fascinating fact that you wanted to share?
Well, I think the one that kind of always blows people's mind is the fact that, I mean, I mentioned that it's peppermint tea, it's not really tea, and it needs to come from Camellia sinensis. And that one plant makes all different types of tea. There's 6 types of tea: black, white, yellow, green, oolong, and pu'er, or dark tea. And all of them come from that one plant. It's just about how much you take from the tea bush and the processing methods, what you do to the leaf that turns it from the green leaf that you've harvested to a black tea or an oolong tea. It's all in the processing. And that actually just completely blew my mind. There's not a green tea plant. There's not a black tea plant. No, it's one plant. And it's just about the processing. I thought that was amazing. And the other thing that I like to do is the tea that I'm drinking today is a roasted green tea called Hojicha from Japan, but it's actually brown. And I love showing people that because they can't get their head around the fact it's a green tea, but it's brown, Sandra. But when I explain
to them... Does it start off green?
No, it's because it's the roasting process.
Oh, okay.
They make it as a green tea and then they roast it. So the roasting process turns it brown. Also creates a chemical called pyrazine, I think it's called, and that's a very relaxing thing. So it's actually, the Japanese drink it in the evenings to kind of relax and unwind.
Excellent. Okay, we'll give that a go then. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights. It's been absolutely fascinating, and as I say, I'd highly recommend your tea tasting events and following on social media to see all those lovely pictures of the glass teapots and the tea being poured.
Absolutely.
But yeah, thank you for joining me tonight. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
A few days after speaking with Sandra, I had a chat with Susie to find out more about tea growing in Scotland. Susie Walker-Munro is a tea grower and producer who has been growing tea in the Strathmore Valley on the east coast of Scotland since 2007. Her career began in wildlife research and conservation, which took her overseas. When she married and moved to their family farm in Scotland, she became interested in crop diversification, and so the adventure in growing tea began. In 2015, she produced Scotland's first commercially sold black tea, Kinnettles Gold. And in 2016, she drew together a group of ladies with farming and rural backgrounds, and they formed the Tea Gardens of Scotland, coming together to grow tea from seed. Today, their black tea, called Nine Ladies Dancin', is to be found at the Rare Tea Counter in Fortnum & Mason. And this year, 5 of the group have combined their leaf from the gardens on the east coast of Scotland and launched a new black tea called 5 Gold Rings, made by Susie at Kinnettles Tea Garden. This, like Kinnettles Gold, is sold in partnership exclusively to Pico Tea in Edinburgh. I had a fascinating chat with Susie, so grab yourself a cuppa and enjoy listening. Welcome to part 2 of this podcast, and I'm joined by Susie Walker-Munro. How are you?
Hello, Laura. Hi, all good here.
Thanks for joining. And can you give me a little bit of background, first of all, about where you're based currently?
Sure, absolutely. We're in the Strathmore Valley. We're very near to Forfar. This is on the east coast of Scotland, about 12 miles inland from the sea. And we're reasonably low altitude. We're only about 300 feet to 600 feet above sea level. And so it's low altitude, but we are 57 degrees northern latitude. So that will affect the tea plants and the way they behave. So it's an interesting location.
Yeah, I was really interested to find out that we actually grow tea in Scotland. So I guess, yeah, the climate and where you're located obviously has a huge impact.
It does. No, it absolutely does. I mean, the teas behave like mountain teas. So you are exchanging your latitude, basically, for altitude. And the Himalayan teas that people often talk about, or your Darjeelings, or again, teas from Nilgiris in India, they have different top notes. And our teas, when we process them, also have that sort of profile. Scottish tea is very distinct from other parts of the world, and is indeed other teas are as well from Scotland. And that's also down to the soil we're on. We're on acidic soils here. It's a fact of farming here. A lot of the crops are lime. Well, a lot of the soil is limed to change that acidity and make it a little bit more alkaline. But for tea plants, they love it. They love that sort of 5.5 acidity to 6. We're a little bit more and we have to work a bit harder at it. So mm-hmm. we're 2 to 6.8, which is really, really not where you're close to that line for tea plants to help them bring up the nutrients from the soil. So our location does affect definitely the tea, but it's nice to be growing a crop that actually does like acidic soils. It feels in the right place.
Gosh, it sounds like there's a lot to think about when it comes to growing tea. But I mean, when did you started growing tea a number of years ago now? So how did it all start?
I started back in 2007, actually, after a trip to the dentist where I read a magazine about growing tea and the farm was looking at diversification and bright ideas for high-end crops, maybe, that we could possibly grow in some of the areas it was difficult to get machinery into. And so it started really as an experiment, just putting a few plants in our walled garden that we were able to get as cuttings from a tea garden down in Cornwall. And then it was a long time until sort of 2015 when finally we were able to sort of get those plants large enough to be able to take leaf off them to prove the concept. We got consultancy help. And at that point, then we were able to produce Scotland's first commercial tea, only 2 kilograms of it. You do have to bear in mind, you have to still pluck 10 kilograms to get those 2 kilograms. So it was a really good start. and that was really where it all began, in a dentist's waiting room thinking, we need a bright idea.
Gosh, things you learn from the dentist.
Yeah, but the magazine showed all the flowers, the primulas, anything that really grows happily on acidic soil. And you looked at the photographs and thought, well, that's what we've got. You know, we've got loads of daffodils here. We've got loads of the same plants, the bluebells, things that they had in Cornwall, and lots of rhododendrons. And so we thought,
give it a go.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was back in 2015, did you start the first commercial tea?
Absolutely. And it was all thanks to Pico Tea in Edinburgh, who very much supported us, because it was quite a high risk thing to do. And also the tea, because so much effort goes into it, it's not cheap. It's actually a luxury tea. It's not something you would buy and say, I'll have this every day. It's you would have on a sort of high days and holidays as a special occasion. And so we were very grateful to them for really sort of helping us with the marketing of it, because you needed to almost educate, because in this country we're very wedded to tea bags. And so you're trying to get people to understand this is loose leaf tea. It's reflecting the elements that are in the soil. It's really, you know, it's organic. It's lovely. You can get 2 infusions off it. It's therefore far better value in its own way than buying your tea bag, which you would just use once. So you can keep reinfusing loose leaf tea. And so it was a big educational message that had to get out there. And so in 2016, 8 others of us came together and we formed a group, Tea Gardens of Scotland. And we turned out to be 9 ladies. It wasn't intended that way. It could equally well have men involved in it. But whatever their reasons were, which we do know, but I won't go into for this podcast, they decided, no, that wasn't for them, but it worked very well for us. And that really helped us going forward, because you were able to work as a team and got specially cold tolerant seed in, and we'd not been allowed to get import seed in up until this point because you could only get tea from cuttings, hence originally getting my plants from down in Cornwall. And once we were able to bring in tea seed, that was a game changer because tea seed has a long tap root which anchors it in the soil. It gives you that capacity to grow tea outside, not having to rely on a polytunnel. Cuttings are very shallow rooted, so they get knocked about with the high winds. They also get affected badly by the frost. So once we were able to say, okay, now we have seed, let's start working on growing tea outside. And so it was a very long-term project. I mean, growing tea is not something you would go into without a farm or another rural business or something behind you. Mm-hmm. We were able to get consultancy help. We were also able to get leader funding, European funding, which made a huge difference because you could go in, really deep dive into it. And we rented half an acre of glass houses. We were able to grow on the seeds. So 40,000 seeds from ex-Soviet Georgia and also from Nepal, from Elam district. And so we knew that the plants that were going to germinate were going to be reasonably robust. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we then were able to, after our first year, plant out. But there were all sorts of trials and tribulations with that. I mean, it's been at various points utterly horrendous, another type of thing. But you've got to sort of find that sort of happy balance. And when you put your tea plants outside, they do get hit by the elements. We killed loads of them. That was just the nature of the beast, but been a great adventure, and I think having a group made a huge difference.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of trial and error and lessons learned and adjusting techniques and things. I mean, how long does the seed take to grow? You're talking about growing the tea plant from seed. So when is the first harvest, or when can you get the first tea leaves from that?
Well, it takes ages. You mm-hmm. really wait 4 years. The expression
4 years
before they come into bearing. And you're sitting there thinking, this is Scotland, you're not bearing very much. So it's a very, very slow burn. The bushes do grow very slowly because we're so far north. They also behave differently because they go dormant over the winter. If they were on the equator, then you've got continuous or let's say sort of stable sunlight. And so you're able to pluck your leaf throughout the year. But once you go north or south of the equator, the plants change their behavior. And although they're an evergreen, they can sometimes behave like a deciduous. They can just drop every single leaf. And you think, oh my God, I've killed them. And you come back the following year, but maybe not even till early June. And you're thinking, oh my goodness. So the quantities of leaf we take off are tiny. The ones outside, you're not harvesting really until May time. And it really depends what's happening. I mean, climate change is definitely making a difference. Mm-hmm. So some years where you could start plucking and it's just a bud and two leaves. So very small amount. And that could be in May time. But I mean, you know, it may go to the early June before you're starting to get, you know, your June, July, August into September plucking season. And then the bushes will start to go dormant when the daylight hours start to reduce. And by sort of middle of October, they're not interested. They don't want to.
Yeah. A bit of a rest.
Leave them alone. So it's very different to other parts of the world where they have a longer growing season.
Am I right in thinking that there is just one species of tea plant, but then it depends on how or where you grow it, what the climate is for the different flavours? Is that right?
Yeah, no, you're completely right. So again, a tea plant, you can make a green tea, a Bura tea, a yellow tea, a white tea, oolong, whatever you want off it. But some of those cultivars are better for some types of teas than for others. So they might in Japan have a Yamakita leaf. It's quite a long leaf, you know, just for the way it's rolled, the look of the leaf, that's more suitable. It's also to do with the flavor profile. And so there's a tendency for some cultivars to be used more specifically for making a white tea or a black tea or whatever. And so actually a lot of the tea making is terribly important, because if you think about it, you know, the way that you process that tea can give you all these different types of tea. But also at the same time, you're wanting to bring out the elements that are in the soil as well. You want that have been drawn up, which will give that unique profile that makes you think, yes, this is definitely a tea from Scotland. And so what you're wanting is that people taste teas that are grown in Scotland and go, wow, I can tell that is from Scotland. Like, you know, you and I, you might drink a Darjeeling tea and say, you can tell that's Darjeeling. It doesn't matter which tea garden it's come from. because actually there is a base note there that sort of in your mind, you think, oh, that must be a Darjeeling tea. And that's what is happening here in Scotland, is that, oh, it's tea.
Because, I mean, there's lots of different flavours. I mean, I know like an Earl Grey tea tastes so different.
Oh, don't go there.
Is that a bad word?
Quite often you will add other flavours to tea, and that's a good thing. But actually what's happened with these teas that we're talking about here on this podcast is that they are grown in such tiny quantities. You want to taste everything that that leaf is offering you. You're not wanting to add anything over the top of it.
So with an Earl Grey, is that there's something added on top of that?
Yes, you would add in bergamot.
Ah, right.
And same with so many of these teas.
Mm-hmm. So with your tea, you're getting...
We don't add anything. So literally ours is 100% pure Scottish tea. It's, you know, organic, it's tiny amounts of leaf, and therefore it's you don't want to smoke it, you don't want to change it in any way other than what you do to process it. Yeah. It's simply withering that leaf. You leave it overnight on a rack and you let it gently, you're getting the moisture. It's about how you draw that moisture out of the leaf. And then the next day you're rolling it. And then after you've ruptured those cells, you then oxidize it. So you put it to one side. And that purely means letting the oxygen, in the case of a black tea, get to that leaf. And then when the incredible scent comes off it, which is released after those cells have been bruised, but you're not tearing the leaf. You're making sure that when it reinfuses in the cup, it will look exactly like the green leaf did, but it's just brown. And then you can move it into the oven, and when that flavor profile is right. And that's what people are paying for. They're paying for somebody to actually, who knows what they're doing, to stand there and get that scent spot on before it's moved to the ovens. And so again, you know, you wouldn't want to with these teas. So, you know, we've got our Canettles Gold here, which is it's actually grown from the plants that we very first got. That's going back, you know, right back to sort of 2007. And we used polytunnels to protect them because they were from cuttings. So you wouldn't do anything to that. And then we've got another one, which is Five Gold Rings. And then that's again from the tea gardens that there's five of us on the East Coast. And again, you would do nothing to change that because you're wanting to get that flavor profile. Our group of nine of us with Tea Gardens of Scotland, we also have our Nine Ladies Dancing Tea. Again, you would do nothing to that. So these teas, and there's other teas within the group that are made as well, green teas, you don't change their profile at all.
Yeah. And some of your tea is available in London and in Edinburgh. Which is the one that's available in Edinburgh, the Pico
and that's
tea?
That's Pico tea in Edinburgh. So they're down in Heath, and they have supported us right from the very, very beginning.
And which tea do they sell?
They do Canettles Gold.
Okay.
Canettles Gold, and they sell Five Gold Rings.
How would you describe the flavour profiles of those teas?
Flowery. The Canettles Gold has top notes, sort of cinnamon, apple. When I say top notes, it sounds really grand.
Like tasting wine.
It is. And actually it is. They are important. I mean, people talk about these top notes and you sort of think, God, that's sounding so sort of...
pretentious and kind of...
Yeah. But they really do come through. When you make a tea well, then it will. And so...
So is it top notes, the ones that initially hit you?
Yeah. And so you suddenly like, well, Five Gold Rings, there is a sort of top note of strawberry. The second bit that comes through is slightly more caramelly flavor, and it's about getting a long mouth feel as well, not too much tannin. You want to know you're drinking a black tea, because that's what you're buying, but it's trying to get that smooth mouth feel as well. So there's quite a lot that goes into it in the processing to make sure that, you know, it's how long you wither it for, it's sort of how long you oxidize it for. There's all these different variables that come in. And so the top notes are when you actually, even when you're brewing it, you can start to get indicators. And it's really nice actually to while it's steeping, just sort of keep wafting.
Yeah. See what happens
around you. And then that almost indicates to your nose what to expect. Yeah. And a sign of a good tea is what you're expecting. Then follows through in the taste in the liquor when you then sip it.
Obviously, it's a lot of factors go into this and a lot of thought process. And you mentioned earlier that you've had support from Aberdeen University. Is that right? In part of, or is that in the growing part?
Well, there were two things. We got support through a European grant called LEADER funding.
Oh, yeah.
That enabled us to actually pay a little bit more attention, because this is where it's important that if people are going to pay good money for good teas, they absolutely need to be 100% sure of the authenticity. And I'm afraid in any any business, there's always this ghastly word passing off, and people will try and pass off these as Scottish when they're not. And so we work with Aberdeen University on an Ironomics project. And Ironomics is essentially that you can walk into any shop selling tea, you can pluck off the shelf, literally the processed leaf, which you would think had been through the ovens, it had been sort of affected, but they are able to do an analysis on it, pick up the elements in it, say, oh yes, this has got quite a lot of copper or something, it's got a lot of magnesium, this has got a lot of whatever. And then they mark it back to the fingerprint profile they have for the soil. So they're able to say, oh, well, we know because we've already got in our database here teas from Japan, China, India, Nepal, wherever. And therefore, we know these regions have this fingerprint. And so they're able to say whether a tea is actually Scottish or it's not. And so that has been for us very, very important that there is now a way of ensuring that if there's any sort of concerns out there, you can check. So it's a
reassurance.
Something we're very proud of as a group that we initiated. And now it's been taken. Now there's a European Specialty Tea Association, and they're now doing further work on that. But we do feel that as a group, we initiated that, which was vital. And we were able to do it because, you know, we had European funding. It enabled us to get consultancy help. We were able to work with Aberdeen University. And it's with any product that's high value and had a lot of care and effort that's gone into it, you have to protect that authenticity. Yeah. Otherwise, someone comes in and passes it off, and they haven't had to pay the wages for plucking or for pruning or for producing or any of that. And you know, just to shove a bit of tea in a bag and give it a bit of Scottish air and pretend that it's grown is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have this thing with Scottish blend, but that's absolutely fine. We know that's, you know, it says on the back of the packet that it's from India or a blend from Kenya. And that's a nod to the old tea planters who were largely Scottish. Mm-hmm. They were sort of sent out with the East India Company or Dan Tea Company or whatever in the past. And so that's absolutely fine because it's clear labelling, but there's been a lot of unclear labelling. And I think that's where, you know, you need to say the percentage is on the back of the label of whatever is in there and a bit more clarity. And so we felt that that at least gave that sort of gateway to protect people.
Yeah, definitely. You need that reassurance and the authenticity, as you say. Yeah. But what is the future then for tea grown in Scotland, do you think, in the next kind of, I don't know, 5-10 years time? What do you expect to happen?
I think it will always be a less is more. Mm-hmm. Because you will only ever get very, very small amounts. It's very difficult to go into it on a larger scale. I think also for our group, when we came together, there were lots of other sort of side benefits to it, because if you had an Airbnb business, people could come and see how you did, you know, see a tea garden. Mm-hmm. When we do tours, there are extra hooks where people are actually interested. They want to come and see, you know, how you make it. They sometimes want to come and try and pluck a bit of tea and to be able to do it in Scotland. And so it's never going to be one of those commercial commodity businesses in Scotland. And I would lay money on that. But I'm afraid that's just because of our seasons. But it's a unique, special product that actually what our soil has and it's truly Scottish.
Yeah, and I'm so interested to actually taste a tea grown in Scotland and to kind of figure out what is that flavour notes of the Scottish tea.
If you want the honest truth, actually, the only time we ever get to have it is when I'm batch tasting. It's too expensive, otherwise just drinking ourselves. You know, we sit there sort of with our ordinary black tea, which is from the supermarket now. So it would be very nice to be drinking our own tea, but we love it when we're batch tasting. But
special occasion. Yeah,
the high days and holidays, as I said earlier on. Yes.
And so do you ever need any help around, was it May, June time for harvesting?
Were you offering?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Come along.
I'll clear the diary then.
Marvellous.
Well, thank you so much for giving that insight and telling us all about Scottish tea. It's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you.
It's been lovely chat to you. Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening to this Food Connections podcast. Do check out the show notes for some useful links related to this episode. And if you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could give it a rating and leave a wee review. Also, please do spread the word and tell others about it. If you have any comments or suggestions for future guests, do get in touch. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.